Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Hello there.
And Benjamin Richardson.
Hello.
Now, I wanted to get you guys together to just have a bit singing, dancing, and loving with Rockstar.
An overabundance of Bens, but I think you can cope.
You know, why not? The whole Ben cast. Rich reminded me that we did do a GTA 6 podcast the other week. My ailing memory didn't tell me that, so I've planned another one. But Rockstar's good, and we all like Rockstar, so it's fine. And plus, I've been playing back through GTA 4, which sort of maybe subliminally got in.
Yeah, I've been playing through Vice City recently and been getting into LA Noir, so it's
nice. So basically, I want to just kind of, because you think about Rockstar, you know, you think about the Red Deads, the GTAs, the whatever, and I kind of just wanted to do a little roundup of the games that they've released that maybe don't have as stellar a reputation as the likes of GTA 5 or GTA 3 or Vice City, and I just wanted to open that up with GTA 4, because that was so divisive at the time.
It was so grey and just drab, and I was like, come on, look, Vice City was so nice and happy and colourful, and then we went a bit down there with San Andreas. Mm-hmm.
But then San Andreas was outlandish and fun.
It was too much. Like, I'm going to eat a burger and now I'm going to get fat. But, like, 4 was just so, like,
Okay, but at the time, what were either of you guys' initial reactions to it? Because I really didn't like it at the time.
I thoroughly enjoyed playing it, but I felt like there was something missing. It definitely felt massively scaled back from San Andreas. Aesthetically, as you say, Ben, right, it was dull, it was dreary. I seem to recall that game was advertised using clips sliced together with, do you know Philip Glass's Kuyanis Katsi?
Yeah.
And that the point of that movie was to represent like the crushing, like
the weight of the city, or the
how it over the world, and it wasn't supposed to be something that you wanted to be part of and play around in, and yet that was perfectly represented in GTA 4. So it lost that sense of fun for
sure. My whole thing with 4 was, like, I mean, I think, because I've got a couple of little things to sort of touch on. Like, I think they went for a more serious tone. I remember people comparing it at the time, saying it was more like Michael Mann than Michael Bay. And I remember, like you said, coming off San Andreas, where it was like, you know, jetpacks and over-the-top stuff and like massive stunts and diving along the fake Nevada desert and whatever. And when you get to GTA 4, like living that sort of like semi-simulated life of this person coming to America, that was really jarring at the time.
Yeah, the problem is that they seem to get this for wrong around it. They made the gameplay more realistic. But I thought the story in San Andreas was perfectly good.
Right.
I wouldn't say it was
a little escalation.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly over the top, but no more so than GTA 4's.
I don't know.
GTA 4 had the big problem with it, the cognitive dissonance, or the narrative dissonance, sorry, with Niko Bellic's vow to become a reformed man, and I won't do the voice, but maybe when he gets to New York, maybe life will be different, and it is. So long as he's in a cutscene, but as soon as he's outside the VAT,
the thing that I've started to sort of like fall back in love with, because I've been through GTA 4 a couple of times over the years, but like I've gone back to it in
it's a long game. It just seems a bit like
not the whole way through it. I've gone back to it because they added it to backwards compatibility like a couple of years back, or a little while ago anyway. And I remember going back to it, and like over time, I've always tried to go back and sort of just drive around in that game, get like a feel for it, because we cover a lot of GTA, GTA 6, and things that the new games can learn from the old ones and whatever. But in this sort of like newer Rockstar landscape with Red Dead Redemption 2, you have that, like if you apply that sort of idea of living a simulated life in a game, if you play GTA 4 to its strengths, like take your time, go to the hot dog stands, get your health bag bit by bit, go hang out with your friends, live in New York. Like, I think it helps because I've been to New York now.
I was going to ask you that. Have you replayed it since
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. The playthrough that I'm doing at the minute, I've just started like the other weekend, and I've sort of like, I've got like a good chunk through it. And it's like I said, like some of the landmark stuff helps, but I think the story that they were trying to tell, like the, it is this massive commentary on the American dream, which like you could pick up on back at the time. But I think coming off the 3D trilogy, which was known for being so ludicrous and over the top and had all these big like caricatured characters and everything, going like kind of reducing all that stuff down and only having a couple of over the top characters like Brucey or Roman, they sort of got away from that. And the fact that Rockstar wanted to do this more serious, nuanced story about like what would an individual, how would someone view the American dream if they were coming in from the outside and had a relative that was telling them about how brilliant it was, only to find that it was fake.
Wouldn't you say that's contrary to the original philosophy of GTA?
It depends what you think the original philosophy of GTA was.
I thought GTA was supposed to be satirical. Mm-hmm. It wasn't supposed to be a commentary, like a social commentary.
I think, I mean, if you go to the original ones, like the whole, like the race and chase tech demo that became GTA, yeah, and whatever, like, yeah, it was just like anarchy. I think they were like that 90s mentality.
And the gameplay was supposed to reflect that.
Mm. Well, I mean, kind of. I mean, you still have like the physics sandbox stuff in GTA 4.
I thought the driving wasn't fun at all.
The driving's so weird. Yeah. Ben, what would you make of the driving initially? Did you get used to it?
It's one of those things where I just took the cabs. I just took the cabs and I skipped the journeys because I was like,
chase down this person, Nico. Yeah, all right, give me a minute.
So you skip 80% of the game.
Yeah, towards the end, and then I just like, nan, and just gave it to a friend and then right, just never got it back.
Go on.
Do you know what I thought one of the biggest problems with the driving was? And this was a case where it became too detailed to be fun. You're right, constantly bumping into tiny little things, little low walls and little bollards.
And yeah, and you just fly over.
Basically things I didn't previously litter the world because it didn't have a high enough poly count. Mm-hmm. You know, it all really adds to it and adds to the realism, but does it detract from the fun?
Well, the thing like that leads to things like failing a mission because you tipped your car over in the last like 2 minutes or whatever. But the thing with the driving, which is weird, which I kind of cottoned onto back in the day, but you can't gun it around every corner. Like you do need to get, like each car is different and you do need to play into the momentum and the physics of each car.
You could do that to an extent in Vice City. Mm. I mean, the physics was realistic to a certain degree, but not to the point that was hyper-realistic. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't like trying to simulate real world. It's trying to produce us, like, make it dramatic.
Yeah, give you opportunities for like over the top stuff. That's the thing though. Like, if I sort of, if you play into it and sort of like you go, like, you kind of treat the whole game a bit slower. If you don't play it like that original 3D pace and just kind of, you know, play into the character, play into the roles that they're trying to give you, and play it a bit more like Red Dead Redemption 2. Like, there's a lot of things in that game that give you that sensibility. Like, whether it's dialing things through the phone, you can like, you know, call the police yourself like manually. Like, different sort of things that happen in the world details, and the fact you can get drunk or whatever, fly out the windshield because you drove too fast. Like, all those things kind of do make it way more immersive. I think playing it now makes more sense than it
did. Yeah, I think that's really fair enough because it's really fair. A lot of people playing that game will be ones who played and enjoyed San Andreas Vice City and probably would have played in the exact same style because why wouldn't they?
Yeah, well, I think if they, because obviously it's on backwards compatibility, but if they were to sort of go, it's an HD remake or a 4K uptick or whatever and re-release it now, it makes so much more sense in this like modern Rockstar world where like Rockstar as a studio have grown up and have started doing more mature stories and have focused on immersion and detail like that.
It's kind of weird. It feels like that 5 should have been where 4 was and 4 should come out afterwards, like the way that it went from that high ramp and then sort of like that massive stop, right? No, we're changing the pace. Yeah. Where 5 seems more like a course correction.
5 for me was always them kind of going like, oh God, sorry. Okay, we'll give you the crazy stuff again. Here's a character who eats people, whatever. And that just kind of felt like they didn't necessarily know what they were doing with GTA anymore, which is weird because that kind of makes 4 stand out as more of an anomaly itself. Like, yeah, like you said, the color palette's really brown and gray and the characters aren't really over the top. You've kind of got to live with it for a good sort of 2 to 3 hours before the propulsion of the plot even kicks in. Yeah. But I do love all the commentary that's in there on America and all the different things.
To give it to you, I'd say it's more brown than gray.
Yeah, probably. It's either way, it is very dull.
Could you imagine Red Dead Redemption 2 making you go and like throw horseshoes at like a pike for a while, like they did in GTA 4, like go bowling for a bit? Mm-hmm.
Well, it's like even like the little mini games, the things that they sort of pepper in that you remember from San Andreas, like it evoked San Andreas, and then you were like, but where's all the fun over the top stuff? And like, that's not what GTA 4 was going for. The ludonarrative dissonance stuff, which is the disconnect between his character as it is in gameplay versus the cutscene, is totally there. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, there's a bit where he says, like, you know, I promised myself I wasn't going to kill anybody, and that comes after the first time you stab a guy for the first time. But the mission straight after that is when you have to help, I forget what the name of the dude is, Little Jacob, and you have to like help him in a like drug deal gone wrong, and you just headshot like 4 people because the little tutorial says, by the way, this is how you do a headshot, and it's like he's just a mass murderer now, but it's completely fine.
But
and,
he carries on even between cutscenes, you can go on mass rampages.
Yeah, exactly. Which obviously they never really found a way to address, other than maybe in, like,
well, they introduced character of Trevor to try and fit that role, which doesn't really make any sense to me because you can do just the same with the other two characters anyway.
But in terms of like, for GTA 4, I think that like if you play it now in like I said, like the sort of the post Red Dead world where you can sort of like go in with that more sort of immersive, slow paced approach, it totally works. Like I would totally recommend GTA 4. It's only benefited from the time since it was first released, and yeah, I think that it's more than worth a shot.
Are you just seeing that game needs more time? It just needed more time.
I think their whole approach, their whole attempt to like mature themselves back in the era when people just wanted banter was the worst possible time. But whatever. Something else from around the 2000s is Bully, which was Benjamin's pick.
It was my pick. I deferred on Rockstar Presents Table Tennis. I am going for Bully. Now, Ben Ray, before we came in, you said you haven't finished Bully and you got sick
actually
of it.
Yeah, let me lay the table.
Wait, I want to know your reasons for that first before I explain why you're wrong.
Let me lay some table, because the whole point with Bully was because I tend to regard Bully as Rockstar's best, one of their best games of all time.
I think a lot of people agree
but like that's the thing though, mentioning Bully around the office and looking at it online, a lot of people are quite divided on Bully, hence enter Ben Roy.
I just don't get the hype. I played it when it came out for a brief time. I didn't own it. It was back in time, like, I borrowed it from a friend who played at the Brown House. But I just, the whole going around the school thing for me just didn't suit. Maybe it's the age or something, or maybe it was some of the other fantastic games like the Reservoir Dogs film game that came out at the time that took people's time away. But for me, what I want from a Rockstar and the Rockstar wandering around is to go around a city, not be confined to being a kid. And maybe if something like that came out now, I'd be more up into it.
Were you not in high school back then, though? Because like part of the appeal for me was like the whole like it reminds me of old Disney shows like Recess or like movies that were set in high school. It's like that idea of like living this sort of like quasi high school fantasy.
I didn't like school though.
But that was why Bully was great, because you could like punch the jocks, or you could go and hang out with the different people, have a snowball fight, or go and do the Halloween tie-in or whatever. Yep. Like I loved all that stuff.
I'm really interested by your answer there, Ben, because I actually think Bully, more than any game, condenses what's great about Rockstar into one really nice, succinct package. Mm. Now, I bought it not long after it came out, but I actually left it on my shelf for a long, long time. I only got around to actually picking it up maybe 4 years back.
Really?
And I think it was the right time to get into it.
I loved it when I was in school, but yeah.
The school thing definitely is a good point. It harkens back. I don't know if you ever saw a game on the Commodore 64 on the Spectrum called School... it's not a Go silly on, question. It's called School Days.
No.
Which was set in a...
No. You have to work in Commodore knowledge.
You had to walk around collecting these report cards, basically, whilst avoiding the teachers. And you could, you know, you could bully the other kids and you could use them to your advantage and stuff. And I think Rockstar took a lot of inspiration from that.
Mm.
It's very much a British school transplanted into an American setting.
Mm-hmm.
The strengths of it... you say you don't like the location of the school.
I just the whole setting of just being like mainly being a kid at school just didn't get it for me.
Right.
Yeah, but I think
you do eventually get to a town.
I think you do, and
maybe it's because I didn't leave the school.
Well, you have to get there. It's like halfway through.
Gradually unfolds a little bit. I actually think that setting is a lot more intimate, and so is the story, and so is the fact that you're not this like outlandish killer. You're not a criminal. You're not someone who basically you can't necessarily relate to, which I think is the case with...
You can give someone one of those wrist burns as much as you can do.
You can't relate to any of GTA's protagonists unless you do that sort of stuff in your life, in which case
you've got... 8 Ball's great.
Yeah, hanging out with you in a little chop shop.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say the vast majority of people who played Red Dead Redemption aren't cowboys.
True.
Fair.
I have 4 cowboy hats.
You a cowboy? But we all went to school, presumably, at some point, and we can all get ourselves in that mindset, and the actual story it's telling is one that a lot of us will have experienced. The idea of trying to fit in at school, the idea of, you know, being bullied, getting your own back
home,
ultimately, I think also Bully, it suffered from its reputation pre-release.
The word Bully would like inflamed a lot of people. Yeah.
Well, it was released in the UK, kind of made it.
Yep.
I can't remember if that was a legal issue more than...
Oh God, it was. Yeah, I don't know.
I think it was a legal thing.
I mean, it came from the whole Jack Thompson, everyone campaigning against the name.
So it was not long after the whole hot coffee controversy with San Andreas. I'm sure everybody's familiar. The mod that allowed you to get it.
Do the do!
Yeah, do the do with a woman. And as soon as people knew that Rockstar were making a game called Bully, you immediately got wrong end of the stick, assumed you can go around. It would glorify picking on people, bullying, and there's I think one group called Peaceaholics who said it glorified and trivialized bullying. I actually think it's a little rich coming from a lobby that whose very name arguably trivializes addiction, but anyway.
Benjamin Slams, Peaceaholic.
I'm sure we do a lot of good work. For hearts in the right place. Mm-hmm. But that simply wasn't the case. Anyone's played Bully can attest that. Jimmy Hopkins.
You're in the middle of a hierarchy.
He arrives at the school with the suggestion that he's being expelled from mm-hmm. his previous and everyone prior to that, like several times, and he's trying to go on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to play in that way at all. In actual fact, as you say, he definitely is on the bottom end of the food chain.
Mm-hmm. I always love that stuff though. Like I love that, like, because for me, at the very beginning, like, one of the best things about Bully is the score, and it kind of has this like real like mischievous sensibility. Like I absolutely adore the soundtrack. It kind of almost reminds me a bit of like Harry Potter. It's a bit creepy.
It's like the Beano. It makes me think of the Beano.
Yeah, totally. It's like the Beano. You get like your skateboard and your slingshot, and it's sort of that Little Rascals approach to high school, which a lot of us saw, like I said, in different TV shows and movie depictions and everything. And it was their way of applying the kind of like, you know, the quasi GTA mold, but like to this sort of like, oh, you little scamp style, like, you know, hanging out in high school, like slingshotting the teachers and then getting chased after by the head teacher as you ran away. Like I remember trying, because you can hit the teacher. This is ludicrous, but you can hit the teachers with a baseball bat, and then if you run away fast enough, you can get away with it again.
And they don't remember.
Repercussions. Very well, the repercussions are more sensible and again more relatable. You get put into detention, you know, and you can't. And what that means is you're restricted. You can't go out after school. And again, it's something we all understand. I actually think in terms of pure gameplay, it doesn't have any of that bloat which just came with later Rockstar games.
All the way to the thing.
Yeah, the world is an absolutely perfect size, and one of the reasons for that is that you don't have vehicles as such. Mm-hmm. You have a bike.
You get a BMX and a skateboard.
I tell you, getting the bike, you really get that violation, the sense of freedom that, you know, that games used to give you when you'd get in your mode of transportation. It nails that perfectly. Mm-hmm. As soon as you get to explore, was it Bulworth Vale and Bulworth Town? And
yeah, there's a whole bit on the beach. There's like this, the beach party still happening. I think there's like a festival comes to
there's
town.
There's a fairground.
Fairground, yeah.
And you go on a date with, I think it's one of your girls in the school who's,
I think it's a lady of your choice.
Well, no, I actually think it's one of the girls who's similarly like awkward and doesn't quite fit in.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really nice thing. That's, again, romance is not something Rockstar have explored particularly well.
Mm.
In certainly GTA, it's usually been in terms of like a mini game where you get a reward for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like women,
you can totally do same-sex relationships as well.
You can as
totally
well.
Overlooked at the time.
Well, women have generally been used as objects or rewards in other Rockstar games, but that's not the case in Bully.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
That's a great strength of it.
But it's like, in terms, like I said, it kind of has charm, which like GTA games are a lot of rock charm. Yeah. Charm.
What confines you from going to these other areas straight away?
You have to, it's
Are the gates to the academy closed? You're like, I can't get over there.
It's a sense of progression.
Because I imagine there's not going to be like an exploded bridge or anything.
No, like, I mean, you have dorms, so like the whole, you know, you have like a routine, you have lessons to go to that you can jump out on, skimp out on, and you have like a place to stay and live, and there's a vending machine and people to hang out with. So you're kind of like, you know, that is your world for the first half of it.
What I would say about bullies, the actual school aspect of it sort of drifts away as the more you go on and becomes more based on what's going on.
You still get benefits if you do stick to your schedule.
Well, see, I'm such an academically minded person and so conscientious. But I did all my lessons first.
Right,
I got all my homework out of the way at the start of the game, so I could then go and play.
Because you do, when you get the, you can do like a paper round when you get your BMX. You can do loads
of little odd jobs. You can do like lawn mowing and things
Just great. Which sounds so ludicrously unfun, but like there's something about living that life of like, you know, you're called Jimmy Hopkins. You have like a really big, like, you know, like a standard Little Rascals. There's a nice rounded sort of name, and the character and the design of Jimmy himself is this sort of like, you know, freckled ginger kid who's just trying to fit
he's an archetypal. He is the archetypal Beano bully.
He looks like someone that they like. They
you know, like it's like the Bash Street Kids. Mm. That's what it is.
The more you say it, it probably was. They just looked at the Beano and was like, "Yeah, we can just do something with that."
To be honest, Ben, I think you would really enjoy it if you revisited it now.
Yeah,
I really think it appealed to you.
Mm-hmm. I think it's like it plays extremely well. I think, and it is on the PS4.
I was playing the PS2 version. I didn't find it difficult getting back into that at all.
How long ago was you playing the PS2?
This was in 2014.
Okay.
2015. I've got it on PS4 downloaded as the PS2 version downloaded and on the Game Pass.
I almost think the Scholarship Edition maybe looks a little clean.
Added some stuff to that, which I thought was
good. Yeah, they added some new lessons, art, I think. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember, possibly music.
Something like that. The thing is, like, I doubt you guys played Prisoner of War on the PS2.
I didn't.
Was a game I've mentioned on an old podcast as well. But like that game, you had a schedule. It was like, you know, you were trying to survive in this sort of POW camp, but alongside like doing your daily chores and whatever, you could slowly mount an escape plan. Like alongside, you could sneak out at nighttime and go get a wrench and slowly like learn how to sort of like escape.
Do you ever play a board game called Escape from Colditz?
No, but I know what that is.
Sounds very similar to that, yeah.
But is it that idea of like doing like a mechanic alongside a schedule? Like the schedule sort of roots you in like certain sort of stables that you have to stick to, but then you have things alongside. I think it lets you live as that character in a way that the other Rockstar games don't, and they moved away from that. I think Bully's the only game they have that has a scheduling system.
Would we agree that Bully's perhaps not underrated more than it is misunderstood?
It's just weird. I mean, for me, like,
underplayed.
It's definitely critically rated very well, and like I've always regarded it as one of Rockstar's absolute best. But like when you sort of like start looking online and like cast the wide net, like a few people like did bounce off it, and it is interesting because like for me, the bubble of friends that I had growing up, we all loved it. We all trading stories about it and everything. But like I said, it's not held up there with Vice City and GTA 3.
I wonder why they've been so resistant to producing a sequel.
That's apparently what we're getting next.
Putting a game out now called Bully. Just like,
well, that's maybe why. I think, as the sort of.
But then again, can you imagine putting a game out called Grand Theft Auto?
Yeah.
Where you go stealing cars and killing people. I mean,
it's very much like a product of the 90s. Like, it's that sort of like more extreme hangover from different titles.
It's not like you kill people in Bully.
No, I mean,
you fire rubber bands at them.
You can fire rubber bands at them. You can give them a wedgie. You can lock them in a locker. Like, that's, you know, it's all very like your little
stuff
scamp.
Them in a bin.
You stuff them in a bin, you put their head in a toilet and do a lot of that. But yeah, there's a lot of things that just sort of, it is very playful. It is very, like, I guess it's very charming. I think if you went back to it now,
it's mischievous.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like being distanced from what they were known for, like all these sort of gritty crime capers or big overblown, like city-based chaos stuff, shrink all that down and focus on what they did well. Like the script is immaculate. The characters are so good.
The voice acting's so funny. As well.
Yeah. And it's just like, I think like it shines as an example of like a really well-written.
So I mean, it's Rockstar the best. Mm. All the things you've mentioned there, the things Rockstar are good at.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Maybe in the January lull.
Maybe. Yeah, for the rest of this year, we're pretty damn swamped. Yeah. Benroy, your pick was Max Payne 3, which is such a good shout.
Ah, see, Max Payne, like for me...
Max Payne.
The series was so perfect with Remedy, and then they got their second shot at it, and they joined with Rockstar. But by joining with them, they signed away all of Max Payne to Rockstar. And then you thought, oh, well, that's it now. We're never going to get another one. And then we finally do get Max Payne 3, and you first see it, like, this is... a weird different color palette. What is this? Why is it not in the
He's
dark?
He's bald with a Hawaiian shirt on.
Why is he Jules? And why is he not in New York City?
Why isn't he Sam Lake?
Exactly.
Yeah. But they kind of ditched the Sam Lake thing in 2, but like in 3, he's bald. He looks like Bruce Willis. Like, yeah.
But then you find out that they're trying to do different things with this. Like, I can't remember if it's before or after this, but you remember Kane Lynch 2 when they did the weird VHS sort of effect on
which
it.
Is a great look.
And they were trying to go for this sort of another good look with this sort of thing. Like, the flashes across the screen.
Very Tony Scott, like Man on Fire type stuff.
Yeah, and from there, like, it just takes like what could be just a boring like open set piece, like shooting a few guys in this rich hotel, and just like making it more alive and more like, oh, I'm going to engage with this. Mm-hmm. And now you're dealing with a Max Payne who's like properly just addicted to pills and alcohol, and he just needs this stuff mm-hmm. to keep going. And he's just like,
Is that related to him using painkillers in the first two
games? Yeah, he's now hooked on them.
Now all that thing that you've been doing to go through these firefights, that's now got him addicted. So mm-hmm. now you're trying to get through this as someone who's like giving it all up. He's not a detective anymore, really. He's just now looking after some rich kids that mm-hmm. he just despises.
Oh, all the commentary that he brings out about like being saddled with these sort of like, you know, like made in Chelsea, made in Essex types that are just like, I've got this party lifestyle. And someone asks him, like, is he having a good time or something? And he's just sort of like, I'm standing in a club, I'm drunk, and I'm armed. Like, what do you think? Or whatever. Yeah. And it's just so many fantastic lines like that.
Imagine just stand next to someone and listen to him like, you want to say something. He just says what he wants to say because he knows he's got the guns and also he's looking for them, looking after them. They might go every now and then, hey, remember, we're paying you. But he's just like, oh, I don't care. I'm just pills, that sort of thing. Pills here.
He's still very stylish. Like as much as they, because they do show him what he's like away from everybody. Like when he has to be in public, he's mostly holding himself together. Like he
stumbling.
Does, yeah, he stumbles a little bit like as the game kind of goes on. But the game opens with him in his homestead or whatever, like in his apartment, just completely out of it, just in like his boxer shorts and a tank top, just like swigging vodka or whatever it is, having the painkillers.
I think narratively you've drawn me in there.
Oh, he's a wreck and it's great.
In the same way you weren't necessarily inspired by Bully, something about Max Payne 3, I was looking at it and thinking, it looks like another generic third-person action shooter.
I mean, it did have a multiplayer mode in it as well.
The multiplayer is weird because they'd managed to make bullet time work in multiplayer, which it was a really cool idea. But like for Max Payne 3 overall, that game suffered so much from mismarketing. Like I think,
right, well, that's what I'm saying. I'd like Ben Ray to sell me on the gameplay.
Yep, so... It's weird.
I can if you can't.
At points, you'd get to bits where it's just like, there's just 100 guys and they're just shouting at me and shooting at me. But like, it took away from like, before you were encouraged to just jump straight in Max Payne. Like, you were encouraged to like, screw it, I'm just going to
run. Well, you had the bullet time as well, so it didn't really matter.
And a lot of the first two were strafing around people. This one, like, the cover shooting actually kind of worked because unlike, say, like, other games at the time, like, you know, you had your Gears of Wars that were popularizing, like, you know, cover-based shooting, like these guys take 1,000 bullets. With Max Payne, like he kind of reacted to like, getting shot, and like you know he needs to take the cover, and only when you would like jump out and do bullet time, that's when you really like had the time to do it. It made it more special rather than just like jump. Sure, it's cool to do a bullet time 100 times in a level, but when you get to do it in this game, like it actually means something because like some of the firefights are still. It's really raw.
The thing that like really brings it together, because I went back through, like I was one of those people who hated the initial look of it, because I was like, he's a Hawaiian shirt, he's shaved his hair off. I was like, what the hell are they doing? It feels like this big drastic reimagining, but it's all in service of the character, and it's all, when he finally does that in the game, when he decides to shave his hair off and wear the Hawaiian shirt, it's because he's completely sardonic and black humor, and he's just laughing at himself. He's like, look how far I've fallen. Look how ridiculous this is.
That's why I shaved my hair.
Well, exactly. And he's just sort of like, his whole thing is that he's like, he refers to himself as this dumb gringo with a gun or whatever. And he's just like, all he's trying to do is just get paid and make it through life. And he's completely lost. And like the way that they translate that into the gameplay is that they have this immaculate physics engine, which is the Rage engine that they did in GTA 4. But like Max's weight, like every one of his movements, he won't just twitch and move the other way. He has to move like lead and turn around, jump off the ground.
It's kind of like a deliberate,
so
like,
good.
Fighting him. You put the input, the buttons, and then he has to do those moves before he can then carry on. Mm-hmm. So you kind of get into that mindset where you are thinking about it a lot more.
That sounds great for that sort of game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you mention the Rage Engine, I'm thinking one of the things that I didn't like about GTA 4 and 5 was the weightiness of the character.
Oh, really?
How it felt like you're always stumbling about.
Oh, you'll leave. I mean, not like Max Payne 3 there, because it's that to like times.
But I don't necessarily mind that in a game that's like action oriented.
The thing that they do is like, because like Ben Roy said, in Max Payne 1 and 2, you were like, you know, diving somewhere, knowing that you were completely safe, taking everybody down and landing on the floor. In Max Payne 3, when you choose to jump out, it feels like you would in a real gunfight. Like, this is a massive risk if I dive out in front of everybody. But because of the weight that you have, and like, I mean, you know, it can pay off.
It sounds like that parallels the narrative idea of Max Payne's vulnerability.
Yes, and that's the thing that I completely fell in love with. Again, if you apply that sort of more mature lens to it, like obviously we've all grown up as people, and Rockstar have matured as a studio.
Some of us.
But like, you know, they were planting seeds for this sort of like mature kind of revolution, renaissance, whatever, like over time. And yeah, you go back to Max Payne 3, and like for me, all of its elements reinforce one another. Like he is this sort of completely broken individual who still has a great witty mind. Like his dialogue, the script is so good for it.
Like sure, in the first two, he would make a massacre sound like a painting. But in this one, like, it was just so the loss of his like trademark coolness. It was just like, I'm just going to shoot you now. Boom. Sort of like, it was like, he's really fallen so far. Like he's lost whatever sort of like suave. He was a cool like detective. And mm-hmm. I was like, I'm just trying to get away and earn some money and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. I don't know the details of production. Was Sami Järvi, Sam Lake, did he write Max Payne?
It was Rockstar's first one. Okay. I think still written by Sam and Dan. I would assume it was the Houses. But you can like mostly tell. It's good though, because it feels like them, you know, carrying on a project that was given to them or they had a hand in beforehand. And plus, yeah, like, just
it feels like, sounds to me like they've been quite respectful.
Totally. The arc that he goes on makes like perfect sense. And like I said, if you play it in its entirety, when he becomes the version that we first saw in the initial first screenshots, you totally get why he's doing it, and you're totally with him. Also, they include a whole bunch of sections that are set in New York, which like they should have opened with back when the game was first revealed, because those things are in there. His trademark and everything.
They should have showed Max Payne, which is what people are expecting.
Mm-hmm.
I was about to say like, when they do go back, it's kind of like, well, maybe I did want this game. Like maybe I did want to see a game fully in New York to see what it's like. But I think it complements it enough with the favelas that almost... I always have trouble saying favelas.
The favelas.
Like at that time, I think a lot of games are trying to go for that sort of like different setting.
I mean, it has like Call
of Duties were going there and everything like that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, something like that. Like they run the risk of like a sitcom taking the characters from the place you know and love and the reason you started watching the show and just putting them in some other location. But like I said, they do the flashbacks. They point out why he left New York, like what he was going for, and then he ends up in this sort of like not like this dead end job, but he's looking after these celebrities, and they get to then you know channel the standard Rockstar like GTA commentary stuff of like Max's opinion on the nightlife and the you know the sort of like the drug culture and everything else, and like he's such a phenomenal character anyway, but the way that they really make him hit rock bottom, and like it's just so well done.
And in his own words, he's a dime store angel of death.
Yes, which is one of the absolute best lines.
And another line which I love, like you play a lot of games where you're shooting people that do not speak the same language as the character, and then this one he actually goes, "What?" He just shouts, "Why are you shouting at me? I do not understand." And he starts shooting back at him, "I don't get it."
Yeah,
as all these people are just shouting and shooting him with AKs and Uzis, like it was like, "Yes, just like acknowledge it for once."
Mm-hmm. He sounds like he has the witty dialogue of a Nathan Drake, but with the correct motivation.
Yeah. I would say it's way more sardonic. It reminds me a lot more of like a stand-up routine. It reminds me of like Doug Stanhope. Like if someone like Doug Stanhope had a couple of pistols. Totally. And it's like he knows that he's not worth anything. And like his opening monologue is this whole thing about him being this dime store merchant of death.
And therefore he's prepared to put his body and life on the line.
And he's just like, what even
so he's
am
no value
I?
In
like,
else's.
Yeah, it's and he's great, like, after considering what he's been through, obviously he didn't get his family back, and that was what Max Payne 2 was like coming to terms with it. And then Mona's kind of left him and whatever. So like in Max Payne 3, he's like, well, I have a set of skills, and I guess that's kind of all I can be, so I might as well just lend myself out and do these things. I think it's some of Rockstar's best writing. Like all three of these games have had some of the best scripts that they've done, and like obviously everyone holds up like Red Dead 1 and 2 is like some of the best written Rockstar games, but they've always had little highlights of it beforehand, even though they kind of get overshadowed with the more open world crime stuff. So yeah, it's a nice little smattering of things.
It's sold me on Max Payne.
Get
it. Are you gonna play Bully?
Well, it's accessible. It's on PS4, isn't it? So I can easily just download it.
You're going to play Bully.
We should do a thing. We can reconvene with this. You should totally play Bully, and you should totally play the other one, Max Payne 3.
And also, next time we reconvene, I probably will have finished L.A. Noir. I know it's Team Bondi, but just...
Rockstar had a big hand in it, though.
I did. Being just in preparation for playing Telling Lies, you know, the Sam Barlow sequel. I've been getting back into some detective games.
Mm-hmm. May I recommend the Sherlock Holmes games?
You may.
Good.
I've heard good things. I've been replaying Return of the Obra Dinn, which I think you agree is one of the best games of last year.
We'll do a whole separate podcast on bloody good detective games.
We should. Yes.
We should.
I already know what I'm going to like and not like about L.A. Noire, I can tell you now. Some of the things we've mentioned here amongst them.
Just don't shout at anyone when you don't mean to.
I've already done that, and I was expecting some repercussions, and the game just made me do it again.
Yep, that's the thing that made me absolutely hate L.A. Noire.
It pulled me out of the immersion completely.
We'll do another pod, because I know that Josh absolutely loves L.A. Noire. At some point we'll do a thing, and I know that L.A. Noire tends to divide a lot of people as well. Either you adore it, or you tend to kind of bounce off it.
It is for me, definitely, like thematically.
I'll say fine up until that last bit of the game. But I won't say, because you've not played it.
Thank you.
True. This is a good one we can hand over to the comments in terms of, because we're going to title this something to do with Rockstar's Unsung Heroes or Hidden Gems or whatever. Let us know what you think down in the comments below of the different ones that we picked and what your general thoughts are on something like L.A. Noire as well. For now, though, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Ben Roy Turner.
Goodbye.
And Benjamin Richardson.
Thank you.
Goodbye. I'll catch you next time. Bye.
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 Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.